afternoon, and welcome back to We the People Radio. This is the second hour of our program today on December the 8th, 2019. Just in case we replay it at another time, you'll have some context for what we're discussing. We're talking about China today. So my name is Aaron Ryan.
And my name is Bill Cundiff, and our sponsor this hour is Pape Machinery. Pape Machinery is the local John Deere ag and turf dealer. Anything ag, anything turf, go up and see them. They've got quite a bit of product in stock. It's full dealer, part sales and service. So if you've got something needs to be worked on, go see them out there in the shop, and they can get you fixed up. And they do work on all makes. So if you have any other brand of tractor, don't be afraid to bring it into them. They've worked on everything. And they're located at 3119 Twin View Boulevard in Shasta Lake City. Look for the big Pape sign, big John Deere sign underneath. They're just south of Phil's Propeller. Their phone number is 226-9226, or you can get them on the web at papemachinery.com. So there you go.
And there you have it.
Yeah.
So if you go to wethepeopleradio.us, you have years of archives, and our show today will be posted. Actually, it'll be posted commercial-free later on this afternoon, but for now, you will... you'll be able to find it on the KCNR site and share it with a friend. I mean, it's really, this information is important, and it's not always, it just isn't actually being discussed in our mainstream media. They don't talk about the whole story, and they're not giving people enough information to make really good decisions. So before we closed out the last hour, we were talking about the social credit score idea in China. And lest you think it could never happen here, I'm sure, I don't know, in China, did they think that was going to happen, Eureka?
In China or in the U.S.?
In China. I mean, when that started happening, did people, I mean, was it a surprise to anyone?
People, there was a saying in China, like a frog was thrown into a pot, and the water wasn't really boiling. It wasn't really boiling. But eventually, as like the fire kept like burning underneath the pot, eventually the frog, it would be too late for the frog to jump out. So there are people are already realizing that, and some they stayed away. They're rather smart. They stayed away from like any sensitive topics. But there are those people who took cues from Hong Kong people. They said if this generation of ours do not stand up, then we're pretty much leaving it to our children to stand up. That's why the kids, like in their only 12-year-old, 18-year-old, 21-year-old, they're like wearing masks and to brave tear gas cannons, and so a large population of Chinese people, especially among intellectuals, they started posting their dissenting views on these social medias. So that's why, as dangerous as apps like WeChat could be, I still have it installed on one of my phones. I have several phones. I have it installed on one of my phones, and I start looking into posts, and they are trying to post. One was really touching. One thing I see it because it got like retweeted. Again, the Twitter is not an app that Chinese could use, so it's their equivalent of Twitter. Got retweeted. They said when future generations, like when your grandkids ask you what you did, when was the suffocating pressure from the authoritarian government, what did you do in defense of freedom, in defense of yourself, freedom of yourself and the freedom of your future, your posterities? He said, I retweeted the facts. So I every few days I saw this got retweeted. And these people under, we have like former Soviet Union that went into history's dustbin ahead of other communist regimes. There are very few. China, I believe, is the stronghold. And then in China, there are these intellectuals. They kept alerting people. If, for example, the word is being censored, like June 4th, that's when the government rolled out tanks, right, to crack down on peaceful students. When June 4th was was blocked. If you treat something with June 4th in it, the whole tweet wouldn't go out. So people would say May 35th. So it was the 35th day after the beginning.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, the algorithm didn't pick that one up.
Right. Then there's also the 8x8, 8 squared, which is 64. So there are all these. And then there are those who wouldn't be able to voice so flatly. They would say, like Mike Pompeo made a good point that it is the ruling party, not the Chinese people, right? It's the ruling party is being really confrontational toward the United States, and it is the Hong Kong, like the police, it's not the Hong Kong people. So Secretary Pompeo is starting to differentiate the ruling party and Chinese people. Then people in China, they had difficulty tweeting this. So what they could tweet is, they would tweet China's foreign ministry spokesman who were like attacking Mike Pompeo. So they would quote him saying, U.S. Secretary of State was trying to sow discord among our party and our people. When he is against our party, he is against the entire Chinese people. So by retweeting foreign ministry spokesperson's comment, people would think, oh, what did U.S. Secretary of State said? They would go dig out. And basically they would know now where U.S. is standing, whether they are in support of Hong Kong protests or they are not. So there are ingenious ways that they are trying to spread facts and spread the news.
That's pretty cool, actually. Now, the recent support from the Trump administration for the protesters in Hong Kong, does that information make it into China?
Yes, it does. And because the government is suppressing free flow of information, I think it has side effects. And then there were rumors in China, in social media groups, and it is much more detrimental than if the government allowed free flow of information. Basically, they're saying U.S. is not only supporting Hong Kong, China retaliated by not allowing U.S. U.S. military vessels, military ships, to get supplies in Hong Kong, right? Then it was circulated in Chinese social media within China, saying like U.S. military ships are gonna stop by Taiwan ports, are gonna pay visits to Taiwan. Then what you're gonna do? So there were all these rumors circulating, and they were saying like one U.S. aircraft carrier, probably USS Ford, or I forgot. I just saw it in social media because these are not like I did not go verify these. I know these most of these are rumors, but it also showed the sentiment. They're saying U.S. Vessels and aircrafts are like a gathering in South China Sea, and they're going to tear down military facilities established on those man-made islands. So if you block information, then rumors would take over.
Right.
So. Sure, and it also makes your information a lot more, you know, I mean, when you realize that you're being lied to or told half-truths or whatever, I mean, we're human, you know. I think the human response is, else are they lying about? It makes you want to go, maybe it was something you didn't even care about, but now you kind of want to know. I think I understand how that would backfire on people. I'm curious when we come back, actually, I guess we have to take another quick break. You know, capitalism is wonderful, but it really interrupts our show a lot. God love them, but, you know, it's just, it's like, darn it.
It also keeps our show going. We get financed.
That's
exactly.
Right.
Exactly. It's a give and take thing. But it's like, oh, man, again, time for a break? I told you we'd run out of time. We always do. Anyway, we'll be back with our guest, Eureka Young. You're listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us. So take my home, that's what you say.
Do everything, well, I can try. And as I roll along, I begin to find things aren't always just what they seem. I wanna turn the whole thing upside down. I'll find the things they say just can't be found. I'll share this love I'll find with everyone.
Alrighty, and we're back. So, are there things actually that we haven't even discussed yet? You're thinking, gee, they ought to know. Yeah.
I think.
I know you kind of had a list, and unfortunately, I stayed up really late and didn't really read the list this morning as closely as I should have.
Since. About like 3-4 years ago, since President Trump took office, I believe the U.S. Got much clearer on its position toward the assertive policies of Beijing's new generation of leaders, and this helped send a clear signal to those hardliners in Beijing that. It is not wise to challenge universal values. It's not wise to suppress your own people. Mm-hmm. And the time has come that for the 7 million Hong Kong people to voice their aspiration for freedom. And it is also time for us who are overseas to voice our support for aspirations of all Chinese. And in this way, we are actually helping avoid escalation of a confrontation between the two countries. So the hardliners would think again whether they really want to send armed police, want to send People's Liberation Army across the river and to really to crack down in Hong Kong as they did in Tiananmen Square 30 years ago. And because of the bipartisan support, the wide support among American people, I believe Beijing more or less got the signal. Learned that United States would stand firm, and in its trade negotiation, this could be seen in the oscillation of Beijing when it is engaged with the United States in trade negotiation. In beginning of May, Beijing reneged on 150 plus pages of agreement, and then in June, it came out with a white paper, and in the white paper on tariffs on trade negotiation, it clearly said that it is a prerequisite that the U.S. should remove all additional tariffs imposed on Chinese exports, and it maintained this position since June the 2nd when the white paper came out through mid-November when the Hong Kong police were besieging Polytechnic University in Hong Kong. But in the past few days, China's Commerce Department, they changed their tones. They tuned down a little bit. They said the Chinese side considers that the tariffs need to be lowered for us to reach an agreement. So it no longer said.
No tariff.
This is a prerequisite, and it says it's only China's view that this should be lowered rather than completely removed. So it is getting the signal that there's a strong opposition against the authoritarian rule, not only like in the United States, but also in Europe, in the recent NATO summit, and also within China. So I think by voicing our support for people in Hong Kong and people within China for diverging views and dissenting views, we are actually helping building, avoiding further escalation of conflicts.
Now, as far as Hong Kong goes, the CCP is kind of silently cracking down on the protesters, aren't they?
Yes. I think they were not able to openly declare a curfew or send troops. I think the longer it drags on, the more divided within the leadership would become. And in June, before June 4th, 30th anniversary of June 4th, Secretary Pompeo said that the United States urges the Chinese government to make a full public accounting of those killed or missing to give comfort to the many victims of this dark chapter of history. And in Hong Kong, if the current leadership proceeds, pulls out, rolls out tanks as the previous administration did in 1989, and even without rolling out tanks, I believe there are numerous accounts of a missing and the deaths and the so-called suicide cases.
Right.
All these need to be accounted for. So I believe people, the outside world, together with people in Hong Kong, we really need to keep our pressure on. And this would help diffuse the crackdown and try to help the CCP not to make the suicidal decision.
Right.
And it is not only going to hurt people in Hong Kong, it's going to hurt its own regime, which it is worried most. So I hope things wouldn't really deteriorate further.
Well, this our current administration, President Trump, is really the first president in a long time that has actually stood up to China and not backed down. And so do you think that's where they're having a little bit of trouble reading him or figuring out if this is for real or you know what I'm saying? They don't know him. They know he's playing kind of hardball, but it looks like his strategy is starting to work.
Yes, I agree, and I think they did see President Trump as a very tough leader, and they still overestimated, because in China it is ruled by the by seniority and by the hierarchy, and they are not used to listening to the people or listening to dissenting views. So that's why once they made the decision, it would take a long time before they could realize they made a mistake. And in the past 3-4 years, because of the concentration of power in Secretary General Xi Jinping's hand, and those more outspoken officials and the more spoken intellectuals have been silenced, so he had even fewer channels to get this kind of helpful feedback. And by speaking out, like for people in Hong Kong and like us overseas, by voicing our opinion and our views, this would help them to understand better that President Trump, and together with his cabinet and with his team and with American public, where we stand. Mm-hmm. And this would help Secretary General Xi Jinping not to make poor make terrible judgment, and not really to make himself like carry out things that he would be held accountable.
Right, and he, I mean the Chinese leadership. I mean they always play the long game. I mean they can outweigh anybody, but. In this trade situation, that has more of an immediate impact on the economy in China. And does that
raise the stakes at all?
Yeah, it does. Yeah, I think it doesn't that raise the stakes. I mean, they can't. I mean, it's going to hurt them a lot more than I think it'll hurt the U.S. trade wise when you consider all the Chinese imports that come to the U.S. I mean, if those were to be cut off. I would imagine.
And how did they explain that?
Yeah, they would rapidly run out of funds.
Yes, you're absolutely right. And China's economy, despite the gleaning cities they built up, the coastal cities, and it was primarily driven by investment and by exports, and by some they built like a super bullet, right? This kind of a like a highway, like a railway,
mm-hmm.
and high-speed railway.
Well, like the kind that we just talked about?
Yeah, they had to align these with military and strategic goals in order to get the project going. And they had been, overextended for decades. And now is the time for reckoning. And this time has come. And also due to the lack of a feedback loop, they didn't realize how bad things are. They didn't realize how bad things had already been a few years ago. So now the economy is slowing down. People are saying they could no longer maintain 6% growth, and they could do only 4%. Even this 4%, there was plenty waste and plenty of bloating numbers, like kind of exaggeration in it,
mm-hmm.
and with the export being like there's barrier to China's exports, and then there's also this depletion of its foreign reserve. So the government is really put between a rock and a hard place. If it continues on this confrontation against the rest of the world, and it really couldn't sustain itself economically.
Sure.
And then they would have to explain why that was happening, and all the stories that they've told, again, fall apart. When we come back, we've got to take a quick break, but when we come back, I'd like to know how much do you think they are listening to people inside China? Versus how much are they looking at the out, from the outside looking in? I mean, are they, that feedback loop you talked about, I'm curious how large a role you think that plays in their decision making. Because if you're in a place where no one dissents or no one's allowed, I mean, it'd be pretty easy to think that you were awesome and had all the right ideas. And we all know how that usually ends in history. But tell us more about that when we come back. You're listening to We the People. You can find us online at wethepeopleradio.us.
You have to learn to pace yourself. Pressure. You're just like everybody else. Pressure. You've only had to run so far, so good. But you will come to a place where the only thing you feel are loaded guns in your face, and you'll have to deal with pressure. I held firm to what I felt was right, like a rock. Like a rock, I was strong as I could be. Like a rock, nothing ever got to me. Like a rock, I was something to see. Like a rock.
kind of a ode to the protesters. There are a lot of people paying a pretty high price for this change that the people in China are seeking. But I'm curious, the leadership, does it just listen in its own echo chamber, and do they figure that they know best and they've got it handled? Because as far as, you know, I mean, if I was going to think in recent history, you know, the last 100, 200 years, that's always where they make the mistake.
Yeah.
They think they've got it all nailed down. And
yeah, it doesn't look like they really care what their own people think. They come up with their own.
Yeah, they've got
strategy.
It all handled, and everybody's going to do what they say. What do you think on this? Is this another instance of that, or are they more clever than that?
I agree. They do. They always overestimate the power they have in hand, and they always underestimate public opinion or public consensus. But they do, though, pay close attention to the position the United States government takes. And in the past between 40 and 50 years throughout the interaction between the Chinese government and the U.S. government, there has never been a group of any faction in China that dared to challenge the United States ever survived. That faction always lost. Mm-hmm. So the track record is there. And I think Secretary General Xi Jinping is smart enough to look at the record. And he could start. He was thinking that he could, he exceeded in terms of grandeur, exceeded his predecessors. He is on par with Chairman Mao. But even in Chairman Mao's day, Chairman Mao looked into building a connection with the United States, and Chairman Mao understood the primary threat came from former Soviet Union. And during Mao's final years, which coincided with the Cultural Revolution, there were two leading factions. One was by Premier Zhou Enlai, which is the more practical faction. Then there's also the Gang of Four, led by Madame Mao. Those two factions, Mao was playing a balancing game. He allowed both factions to engage with U.S. delegation. So in the banquet, it's always Premier Zhou Enlai. Then there's also Madame Mao. They always both attended receptions. And however, Premier Zhou was educated in his youth, he went study overseas in France and Germany, I believe, in both countries, and he had connections with the young Soviet Union, and also he had been running Foreign Affairs Ministry since the founding of the communist rule. And he was more suave and more diplomatic when dealing with Western dignitaries, while Madame Mao was more blunt. He even challenged Richard Nixon. Why did you come here earlier? It was really blunt. And I got that from Richard Nixon's memoir and when I enrolled in college. So between these two factions, eventually, the Gang of Four they were all arrested within a month after Mao's death. And then there came the second generation leadership, Deng Xiaoping, who was proposing for opening up, but he was fairly authoritarian in terms of political reform. He didn't advocate for political reform alongside economic reform. In economic field, he proposed for more opening up and more reform. Well, there's another leader about the same seniority, Chen Yun, and he was more conservative, even trying to go back to a command economy. So Deng got support from the United States, so his policy carried through. And then after that, there were several more generations of Chinese leaders, and they understood the diplomatic relationship between China and the U.S. was the number one foreign relationship, the most important relationship in terms of China's dealing with the rest of the world. So they always paid attention to that. And
Right.
That is why they always thought their embassy people and their diplomats, and always sought a state visit. They always wanted that status when head of state of China visited the United States.
Right.
While the United States did not always want to grant them such status. So they always thought that. They would rather give up some economic gains. They would pay for their ticket to get this preferential treatment, so that when they returned from the United States, they would be able to tell their colleagues that I'm the one who set China-U.S. relationship on course, and I had the backing of the strongest country in the world, and so as to intimidate adversaries within the party. And now with this Secretary General Xi Jinping, and he thought he through a series of propaganda, right, through CCTV, like the controlled state-run television and all that, he thought he was so powerful, he so dominating, and he listened not a word from what people in Hong Kong are saying, what people in Xinjiang are saying. And then he thought he could even challenge the United States. And then within the communist leadership, I believe, if you pay attention or watch the news from China, not a single Chinese official has come out to say, we really need a crackdown on Hong Kong. It's always either Xi Jinping or the executive Hong Kong administration, or a spokesperson in the foreign ministry. There is hardly, where is the prime minister, right? Where is vice prime ministers who are running Hong Kong and Macau and Taiwan affairs? They never came out. So I believe Xi Jinping is quite isolated if he really wants to go against, face up the United States.
Mm-hmm.
And also in this party hierarchy, China has a long history, at least 2,000 years of imperial rule. And this hierarchy of officials, they are fairly sophisticated. When they want to sabotage somebody, they do not come out as people online were more outspoken, saying, hey, you should not crack down in Hong Kong. We say that. But these officials, they are much more sophisticated than us. They will carry out the crackdown much worse than even Secretary General Xi Jinping would expect, to stir up hatred and discontent among people, among Western countries in the West. So this is their way of sabotaging Xi Jinping by overdoing it. So I believe Xi Jinping is now facing challenges all over, within the Chinese leadership and among the Chinese population and in Hong Kong and as well as in the world. So he's really in a tough spot, and he really should come back to recognize the values that Chinese shared by people in Hong Kong and people in the United States, in the free world. And fundamentally, these values are also shared by people in China. They're hardworking, right? They are intelligent, and they want economic freedom, and they all know that economic freedom is not secured unless they have political freedom. They have a freedom of speech, freedom of assembly. So it is really a time for Chinese leadership to realize, by going against the United States, you are really isolating yourself, not from the Chinese people, but also from those peers within the leadership. That's why we see very few people coming out. There's another case. another convention passed down since at least the Cultural Revolution days. When there is a demonstration in Hong Kong, those neighboring provinces, like two or three, like across from the Taiwan Strait on the mainland, their party bosses in those provinces, neighboring across the river from Hong Kong, it is a grand opportunity for them to voice support, to send armies over to crack down on Hong Kong. Then that would open up the door. They would have a shortcut into Xi Jinping's inner circle. But not a single party boss at provincial level has stood up to voice their support of this hardliner's policy.
Right.
So this is how isolated, like,
we see through our really limited lens here. I would be, I'll be curious when we come back. Talk to us a little bit about how the technology, since you work obviously in that industry, but even, I mean, everybody deals with technology anymore, whether you want to or not. But how much of a game changer is that? Because previous dictators and authoritarian regimes didn't, I mean, there wasn't the information flow that there is now. And I'd be curious to hear your take on that. We'll be right back. You're listening to We the People. You can join us online at wethepeopleradio.us. Okay, so the technology influence. I mean, it can only help, I would think, this time around.
You mean help the authoritarian rulers to hold on to power, or
correct,
help protesters to disseminate information?
Well, I'm kind of thinking help the protesters, but maybe I'm wrong.
I tend to agree as well. This becomes fairly philosophical regarding technology advancement. Before we had a computer, we thought there is so much information to gather in the economy, and state planning wouldn't work. We need a free economy. So then there came out computers, then came out big data, and then people, especially those working in an authoritarian government, they will think now we are master of the universe. We have all the information, all the input for decision making. So they become more and more arrogant and more detached. And this is how China has built up its huge amount of debt. I think their numbers saying it's 300% of GDP, and it's not even counting in the off-balance sheet, like those kind of a hidden debt. And it also has sowed so much social discontent among disadvantaged social groups. And with but at the same time, it could, if an authoritarian regime becomes a dominant player in certain area, if countries like Britain, Germany, they are not alert enough to invasive devices, right, that cuts into their infrastructure of communication. Then they would really be handicapped in this game. And there have been reports that diplomats from South Korea or from other countries, they fell into traps of like corruption, bribery, and whining and dining and all that. They fell into these traps. Then they were forced to work for Chinese government, and they in the end some committed suicide.
Wow!
So with sophisticated technology equipment, tech equipment, it would really harm these countries if they are not alert. And I believe the awareness that you're raising as We the People Radio try to let people be on guard. And I think the authoritarian rule has not crossed the tipping point that it could pull down the United States. But it is also important that we do stay alert. And for people, for the social media groups in China, they are able to get information from overseas and disseminate within China, although they are putting their lives on the line. It's very risky. But at the same time, people are realizing maybe authoritarian rule wouldn't last. So people are setting the stage for the post-authoritarian era in China as well.
In recognizing that the relationship between China and the U.S. is very important to China's economy, how do you see their relationship with Russia developing in the near future? One of the things I've heard some of the pundits talk about is, if Russia and China ever got together, the United States would be sunk. Do you ever, or do you feel that's something that would ever happen?
It is a game that China likes to play, but Russia is more cool-headed. And there was this video that Secretary General Xi Jinping went to Russia to attend a summit. I'll have to dig it out and get a link to you. And Vladimir Putin was, after the forum, both Secretary General Xi and President Putin were guest speakers. They stood up and they chatted with hosts. President Putin was engaged in a lengthy talk with a really attractive female anchor who hosted the forum, while leaving President Xi Jinping aside without even turning around or talking to him. And President Xi had to turn around to shake hands with people off the stage.
Ouch.
So he was bending down and he nearly fell off. And the Associated Press had a footage about 1 minute and 3 seconds. And after he was held up and pulled back and without falling by one of the bodyguards of President Putin, President Putin still ignored him for a while and then briefly shook hands with Secretary General Xi. Then he turned around and continued walking off the stage, chatting again with the attractive hostess. So I think this could be a signal that Vladimir Putin would like to send to the world, to the outside world. And also, we revealed the history between interactions between China and the United States in the past 40, 50 years, and also among these early generations of Chinese leaders, like Chairman Mao, like Deng Xiaoping, they understood the danger of former Soviet Union and today's Russia. When I was a kid, in our high school textbooks, we were taught that Russia, as an empire, it took a lot of China's land. And in our textbook, we learned that Vladimir Lenin who was the first generation leader in the Soviet Union, Vladimir Lenin did not acknowledge these unfair treaties signed between Russian czars and the Chinese emperors. So one day these would be renegotiated. I believe it was since the third generation of China's leadership, Jiang Zemin, who turned soft on Russia and made huge concession. So China and Russia resolved all the border disputes, and what the resolution exactly was never made public. And now, but even then, I think China was, because of Chinese people's suspicion over Russia as an empire, there was not such closeness between China and Russia. And the Secretary General Xi Jinping was the first leader, was openly bragging about his close relationship with Putin. And I think it is not very much welcome within China, within the leadership. And it could pose temporary distraction to the U.S., but I don't think it would materialize. Though, in short term, if there is military skirmishes between China and the United States, for example, in South China Sea or across the Taiwan Strait, alliance between China and Russia would be detrimental to U.S. national interest. Mm-hmm. So it is something that we need to keep an eye on. But it is also something that I don't think Chinese people would really go for, a closer relationship with Russia than
with Russia.
A good relationship with the United States.
Right. Oh, yeah, it's definitely in their interest to keep communications and a good relationship with the U.S. There's not a lot to be gained by, developing a cozy relationship with Russia other than militarily, which China really, I don't think, needs. When you look at the size of both militaries, China can take care of itself. But economically, their relationship with the U.S. is pretty important. So,
yes.
Wow. Well, this has been illuminating, as always. We always, you guys have so much good information for us, and we would be happy to speak with any of your friends with information, and I'm sure we'll chat with you again.
I look forward to that.
Thanks very much.
Really,
our guest has been Yurika Young. You can find the archive of the program at wethepeopleradio.us.
Wide awake, the fever burns, sweat it out, wait my turn. Can you hear the drumming? There's a revolution coming. All this doubt is creeping in, inside out.